Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 96. Happy New Year, which means it is Bloom Board season, folks. We're going to kick you off with some Bloom Boards tonight before we get our positional previews for the 2024 fantasy season starting up with you guys next week. You can find me on Twitter at BDentric, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and my co-host, as always, on the Twitter at Ryan BHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how we doing, my friend?
We're hanging on by a thread. I'm not going to lie tonight, Bubba. You can probably all hear it in my voice already at this point, but spent a week in Virginia with the family back home, got the flu on New Year's and haven't really gotten much better. So flew home last night, got the eucalyptus tea down here, got a 40 pack of cough drops, got some NyQuil. I'll pop about halfway through the episode. It's a tough scene. It's a tough scene at Bubba in the Bloom North here. How are you doing? Hopefully better than me. Happy New Year, man.
Yeah, happy New Year to you too. It's weird because before, like out of our last episodes, I was the one under the gun, like with the sniffles and everything. And we've changed roles here. And I will say it was kind of funny to me in a roundabout way. Like I knew Ryan was already not feeling well. We talked before this, but when we first logged in, for those watching on YouTube, he's got the beanie on. He's all bundled up. And I'm like, yeah, that's a sick man right there. That's a guy. He's got the chills or something going on.
The indoor beanie is not a fashion stay. I didn't mention that as part of my apparatus here. But yeah, I got the beanie on inside, which, yeah, just instant red flag.
But yeah, he's playing hurt. He's not injured, folks. So we're going to power through this one and get you guys going. And like I said, next week we'll kick off the season previews coming at you Tuesdays and Thursday nights. To get you ready, as it is hardcore draft season already. Like DCs are flying off, and it's NFBC 50s. Gladiators are almost done. And mentioned it in our last episode, Bubba and the Bloom Listener Leagues, folks. Auction leagues, you guys are awesome. That's all I'm going to say. Between sending me messages and Ryan messages, we are on the verge of probably close to filling up two leagues already, which is pretty dang awesome. We're talking, I believe we were thinking 15 team leagues, right? Yeah.
Yep.
See, yeah. Yeah. So we're closing in on two teams already. So what we're going to say is, remember, if you guys leave a rating and review, and you can send it to Ryan, myself, both the podcast, whatever you want, and we will put you on the, and you're interested, put you on the list. We're talking about probably a $50 price point right now. That's the goal. If we get four or more teams, we're going to work on getting an overall component. Four more leagues. We're going to get an overall component. And if we get four or more leagues, we've already discussed a pretty cool prize we're going to put out there for you guys, but we got to get there first. So just let us know. Get on in. Make it happen. Did I leave anything else out of that one?
I was just, like it was almost when we brought up the auction listener league, it was like in the middle of our New Year's resolution episode last Thursday. And it was like, not almost a passing glance, but like it wasn't a highlight of the show. So it was really cool to even just mention it, to be able to fill almost two leagues at this point. Really appreciate everyone who reached out, left ratings and reviews. And yeah, we're going to keep pumping it here on the show, and I'm excited for it. So everything else you said, Bubba, is about right. Did you mention dates? We're thinking like early March ish. So yeah. Just a heads up. We'll obviously flesh out some details as these next couple of weeks as we get a more firm number.
If we start realizing we're getting like 6 to 8 leagues, we might start in February. And here's the reality, Ryan and I joked about also before the show. We mentioned last week on the episode that, you know, we'll try to have at least, if we get a bunch of leagues, try to have at least one of us in each league to make it fun for you. If we start getting into the 5, 6, 7, 8s, there's a chance we might not play in every league, but you'll still be a part of the listener league. Part of the overall, all that fun stuff. Yep. So don't get offended in that. And what we'll do is I'll do it live on the air. I already thought about this. When we finalize the amount of teams, we will do random draws on the air to pick your leagues, essentially, because we have to give you guys each an individual link. That way it's completely fair. We're not picking teams. We're not doing any of that. And it'll be pretty sweet. So yeah, Joe Rico's in the chat saying auctions, eh? Yes, 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 Mr. Canuck. That is correct, eh? Yeah, auctions. So come on and join the fun. And have some fun there. It's going to be pretty awesome if we can make this work. It'd be really cool if it's a yearly occurrence. But spread the word. Rates, reviews, and you get a chance to join the league. Pretty cool stuff.
Yep.
All right. I mentioned at the top of the show, Bloom Board season. I know Ryan mentioned the last episode when January turns around. It's Bloom Board time. He's already put out a couple Bloom Boards. I'm gonna give you the floor, Ryan, because you are Mr. Bloom Boards, of course, and you can kick, like, talk about your boards, whatever you want to do. The floor is yours.
Yeah, like every, it's pretty much, I mean, it's up there with the Rose Bowl in terms of like American traditions at this point, where.
Oh, Jesus. You told me not to make you laugh.
I said before the show, if you make me laugh, I might die, and I'm laughing at myself. Pretty much every January 1st, it's kind of like fantasy football's over. Calendar turns, and like the last few years, things, at least on social media, kind of instantly flip to baseball. And like this week has been absolutely that, Bubba, you were mentioning, and all that fun stuff at the top. So I pretty much planning to do about, and we've, I mean, listeners of the show have known for a while, Bloom Boards is what we do. Planning to do about 4 per week, usually on the weekdays. And for those of you that are new to Bloom Boards, they're basically filters and lists of guys based on things that I think are important. Maybe some folks haven't really thought of. The thing I always say with these things is they're the start of a conversation, not the end. And I'm glad that this podcast gives us the platform to be able to kind of deeper dive some of the names that show up on a board. There may be a board that has, you know, good filters, a board that has bad filters. It doesn't mean I'm in on every single player, out on every single player. There's some nuance to this. And so what we'll do tonight is we will talk about 2 Bloom boards that I put out this week, pre-scheduled on vacation. The first one is Steamer versus 2023 ERA. And then we'll get to the second one, which is,
K-to-walk percentage, second half.
Which we kind of did at, we did something similar at FPAS, but to be quite honest, that was like a little bit more trivia. We didn't really go as deep into the players themselves. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many folks listened to that podcast, and anyone who was in that room was heavily lubricated. So
having a great time.
We can probably just, you know, rehash some of that stuff.
And I will say, like, the big prizes at FPAS was autographed baseballs from myself and Ryan. Yeah. That will not be the prize if you play in a listener league. It'll be better than that, I promise. So that's a guarantee.
That's a good point of distinction.
And I will put a caveat on the Bloom boards that Ryan was talking about. One thing I always like to say, and so I'm pretty sure Ryan's on the same page here, the biggest use of these Bloom boards is to open your mind to maybe digging in on a player. It's not so much about comparing this to that and, you know, just all of a sudden I like this guy because the Bloom board said so. No, it's always, there's always a couple of guys on every board where you're just like, there's the usual suspects. And then you're just like, whoa, what's this guy doing here? And then it makes you kind of think about it and maybe look into it. Was this maybe 1 or 2 stats we're looking at? Just like a fluky thing? Was this, wow, he was actually really good in the second half, but his overall metrics don't show it. So he's probably down in ADP or something. Things along those lines to go to.
And it's actually how I tend to prep. I think the more conventional, like during this offseason, I think the more conventional way is to almost go like player by player by player by player. What I kind of do is I take projections as what they are, but then I run all these Bloom boards and what they're able to do is just kind of look at outliers and kind of bubble those guys to the top. We'll talk about like Michael Grove tonight. It's like someone, if I'm going down pitcher by pitcher and I'm at pitcher 120 or whatever Michael Grove is in ADP, am I giving him, you know, that fair shake? Whereas if he pops on near the top of a Bloom board, it's like, okay, I should probably focus on this guy and see if this is someone I want to target, this sort of thing. So it's a big part of my draft prep process as well.
For sure. So let's get into it. Let's start with the first board here. This is a fun one because there's some definite names on here that make us go, And that is 2023 ERAs versus Steamer projections. And Bloom's ahead of the curve here. He's already got it up on the screen for, you know, flu and all. He's brought his A game. It's like the flu game for Bloomfield. We're gonna have a good one here. I'm just going to start with the guy on the top of this list, Taj Bradley. I think the gaps are, these the gaps, like the biggest value changes? Is that where we're going?
Explain
the board. Sorry, I jumped ahead of that one.
We're good. So what we're looking at here for the YouTube and the live stream crowd, we've got 2 columns, a green and a red. And the green guys who we'll talk about first are the pitchers who are projected by Steamer, which is a publicly available projection system that you can go grab on Fangraphs that you can download. on Fangraphs. It's free. These are the pitchers expected to improve their ERA the most versus what they posted in 2023. So, for example, Taj Bradley had a 5.59 ERA in 2023. Steamer's projecting him to have a 4.03 ERA in 2024. So Taj Bradley is projected to improve just by ERA the most over any pitcher. On the right side, Javier Assad is your biggest fader, I guess I should say. 3.05 ERA in 2023 and a 4.72 projection by Steamer. So, I mean, I think what we'll talk about, we'll go through a lot of these guys, like, do we believe, and this is not to crap on Steamer by any means. In fact, Steamer nailed a bunch of these fades last season. It was quite interesting. I've mentioned this a couple times last year on the pod, but Steamer was like very down on Dylan Cease, on Alek Manoah, on Christian Javier. They had Yusei Kikuchi with a better ERA than those guys. And I posted something similar to last year, and everyone was like, Steamer sucks. This is, you know, projections are useless. It's like this stuff is pretty good. No system is nowhere near 100%, even 70%, I think. But the goal of this is not to berate Steamer. It's a very solid projection system to start out and look at guys.
Yep, most definitely. So let's look at Taj Bradley with his 5.59 2023 ERA, which was a roller coaster ride for Taj. Like, started out great. Struggled, goes to AAA, comes back. It's just, it was a total up and down season. A lot of issues with Taj Bradley. The Steamers got faith in him to come back to a 4.03 ERA, which could end up being serviceable when you talk about a guy with an ADP of 255 going around the Kikuchis, Maedas of the world. But when we're looking at the Steamer projection of 4.03, are you kind of believing this, or are you out on this? Like, I honestly don't. I don't think he's a 5.59 guy for sure. Like, I'm agreeing with that. The 4.03 is the part where you have to try to convince the situation. So, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you had a lot of Taj Bradley last year, Bubba. So you could probably speak to this a little bit more. That the fascinating thing with Taj Bradley was just the like instant. There was some jerking around of him by the Rays, getting sent down, going back up, whatever. Taj Bradley's walk rate by month last year, 3% in April, which is just elite, then 5% in May, and then it went to hell, 11%, 10%, and 10% in September. So, like, and this is what on the live show at First Pitch, Jason Collette, his biggest thing with Taj Bradley was just lack of command. I don't buy a 4.03 ERA. I'm with you. I'm thinking more like 4.50. Until and the whip's gonna hurt again. This is only one category, ERA. I need to see a better walk rate from Taj Bradley before I even probably think about buying in.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's a tough one. Like, I had Collette on to preview the Rays and similar thoughts as he had at First Pitch. He's still interested in him. Collette even admitted he was impressed with the you know, we talk about how smart the fantasy world is getting. That usually, if you would have saw a production like Tyler Anderson a couple of years ago, you were like, why is he so low when, you know, he pitched so well? Well, Collette was thinking Taj Bradley with a 5.59 ERA and all the ups and downs he had, he expected his ADP to be somewhere in the 300s, like in the mid 350s or so, because that's just the way we usually operate. Guy sucked. He's going down. The fact that he's still up at 250, Collette's like, wow, people are getting smarter, because he admits the talent's there. He's not as bad as he was last year. And it's one of those guys that if you wanted to take a chance on, as he's getting, you know, he's still so young. Last season, he was 22 years old. He's going to be 23. He's still working on things. He, between AAA and the bigs, he threw about a combined 142 innings. Like, so that's a plus already. The innings are there. That's a big thing. And Collette's saying, okay, he's going to be 23. If he somehow improves the command just a little bit, like, this could be a good pick at 255. Like, why can't he be Yusei Kikuchi with a low 4 ERA type stuff? Like, Kikuchi overperformed that last year, but he's usually a low 4s guy. That's what we're looking at. So I guess what I'm trying to say is I agree with Steamer in the fact that he's definitely not 5.59. Where he lands is the massive question, but to give like a fantasy caveat, if you were going to take a chance on someone in that range, like, there's definitely a lot of upside to Taj Bradley. I'm not saying he's going to be that first 2 month pitcher we saw, but definitely not the guy we saw the last 4 months of the year. So, because literally, even in the first 2 months of the year when he was really, really good, he still had almost an 8% walk rate. So it wasn't like he wasn't walking anybody, but his strikeout rate was so much better that it kept the ERA down. The strikeouts went up, wins were there. So he's not far off is what I'm trying to say, which makes it very interesting.
I'm probably out, but
no, yeah, it's a tough button to click. I 100% agree, because like I said, you got Kikuchi coming off his year. You got Kenta Maeda there, Reese Olsen, who is pretty steady Eddie behind him, Seth Lugo. A good comparison, possibly going 15 picks later, essentially, is Kyle Harrison of the Giants, another young guy that we saw the roller coaster, not as many innings as Taj Bradley. So there's a differentiator if you want to. Similar things, though, lots of upside arm, but where's it go is the question. I guess we'll have to do it. Lance Lynn. 5.73 ERA.
I've got the flu, and you're going to make me talk about Lance Lynn.
Well, you said you got a stuffed up nose. Didn't say you had the stomach flu. Lance Lynn,
stomach flu now.
4.33. Steamers got him at 4.33, which in reality for Lance Lynn, still a little bit high compared to his career norms. Not saying that's not what he's going to be. This is a guy that had sub 4 ERAs for four straight seasons and had sub 4 ERAs all but 1 year of his career up till this point. So what are you thinking on Lance Lynn?
So that's the interesting thing, and I don't have a right answer to this, but I'm glad you mentioned, and I think so much analysis is placed on 2023 only. And these projections, what they are doing is taking, I think, Steamer's like a three-year-ish average. Lance Lynn, ERA, 2019, 367, 332, 269, 399, and then 573 last year. Like, what's the outlier? I mean, most likely – statistical probability is that ERA drops down much closer to its baseline, and that's what Steamer is saying. Mm-hmm. The only caveats I will mention on that is Lance Lynn's age, and I know Steamer does have an aging curve built in, but it's the age. Lance Lynn, 2024 will be Lance Lynn's age 37 season. And again, a big thing for me with pitchers is what do you do for me lately? How do you look down the stretch? Lost some control and lost a ton of whiffs in the second half. The first half swinging strike rate was up at like 16% for Lance Lynn, which is really elite, and which is why, like, through all those struggles, we were still in on him constantly last year. That swinging strike rate went from 16% down to like league average 12%. So you take that like recent trend with the age, I'm still recovering from last year, so probably not doing it, but I can absolutely see a low fours ERA from Lance Lynn just based on the baseline. That's what Steamer sees.
Yeah, I could see it. The biggest concern I have is what you mentioned is his age. He's still getting older. Obviously going to St. Louis should help compared to where he's been pitching the last year. But it's the age is a concern. And, you know, he did throw a ton of innings last year. He hasn't done that since 2019. So that's another thing. Like, I'm not saying he can't do it. He's a bull. Like, he's a big boy that can just roll. But we've kind of said forever, if he starts to struggle at all with a guy that throws basically four different fastballs or whatever, like, you're going to get in trouble. And he finally got in trouble. And that's just the concern I have with him. ADP of 301, though, I've been much more intrigued by. I'll be honest, just because, especially at least in DC formats where you just need innings at a certain point and you're crossing your fingers that they're not going to be ERA close to six innings situation. And that's where Lynn becomes appealing in drafted holds for sure. But we'll see. It's tough to see him ever go back to that consistent just beast, but he's definitely not as bad as a 5.73. I'm going to still stick with that one.
Few people are.
Yes, that's true. That's true. Hunter Brown. This is a guy that I can't wrap my head around at all. I have no idea what to do with him, but 5.09 ERA last season. Steamer has him at 3.78. The boy is 25 years old. He'll be 25 this year. But he threw 155 innings, which was a plus, Ryan. At the same time, though, that ERA was a massive one, and so was the whip. So what are you thinking when you see this? Because you mentioned Lynn's three-year average. Well, Hunter Brown don't have a three-year average. So this 3.78 stands out to me in quite a big way.
Yeah, this and so looking at Hunter Brown, his Sierra, which everyone's like, what the hell is Sierra? Sierra is Fangraph's, like, one of it, Fangraph's pitching estimators. Despite the 5.09 ERA from Hunter Brown, hit a 3.74, which is more indicative of what his skills were last year. So that's, I think, why, because we don't have that track record outside of minor leagues. I think that's why Steamer's projecting such an improvement for Hunter Brown. similar to like Taj Bradley, Hunter Brown did not hold up that well in the second half. 38% ball rate in the second half, just was not throwing as many strikes. And the swinging strike went down below 11% in the second half for Hunter Brown. So, like, yes, we look at the Ks, the walks. I'm going kind of one level deeper on both of those and looking at how many, you know, how many whiffs you have and how many strikes you're throwing. And those don't look as good. He does not have a single pitch over 15% swinging strike rate. So doesn't have like a true out pitch. Again, at just at this point, still young. So I'm lukewarm on Hunter Brown, and given the Steamer projection, probably what other models may project. Steamer's like, I think the only public one that's out right now. Yep. I'm probably going to be out on Brown.
Yeah, he's interesting. The more we sit here and talk about him, like his left on base rate was 69%, which is really low. Like he could probably get a bump there. 21% home run to fly ball. That's way high compared to what you'd expect. And you, like you mentioned Sierra, the XFIP was 3.52.
Yep.
Not bad either. That's pretty promising in the right direction of things. But yeah, a lot of it was that second half. I remember that strictly from DFS. Like I would stack against Hunter Brown because it was just ugly late in the season. It was bombs away, walks away, you name it. It was not good at all. So maybe it was a wear down thing, kind of like we saw with Tyler Wells, but the Orioles sent him down and then brought him back in the bullpen. The Astros never did that with Hunter Brown because they had injury concerns. It'll be interesting on draft day though, because when you look at Hunter Brown, he's got a 183 ADP. He's going right behind Christian Javier and right in front of Bryce Miller. So it's a really kind of what do you expect from these guys? Like some people think Christian Javier will bounce back. I don't, but some do. Then you got these young guys in Brian Wu and Bryce Miller right there from Seattle. So fun little realm for sure.
Forecaster put an up 350 ERA on Hunter Brown. So that's me not being a company man, I guess.
It happens. That's why you just do what I do. And you have a bunch of companies. So you can't be one company man. Brady Singer. Let's talk
your boy. This is your boy.
Yeah, that's why I wasn't going to skip him. Going to hold true here. 5.52 ERA. Steamer's got him at 4.37. I'm in. What else you need to talk about? I'm kidding. What else you got?
I mean, so you can improve and still be projected for you can be the fourth best projected ERA improver. That's a terrible sentence. And still throw a 4.37 ERA. That's how bad Brady Singer was last year.
Yeah, it wasn't good. It wasn't good. It wasn't good at all. But 4.28 XFIP last year, that's promising. There are signs of goodness. Like you could give a little credit to the man. Come on.
Not really. I mean, so he 50% ground ball rate. I'll give him that. Keeps the ball on the ground. He doesn't miss bats. Yeah, 19% strikeout rate last year. Like the walk rate isn't, it's just league average. Like, yeah, he throws some innings, but like more of like not good innings is not good. That's another terrible sentence, but it's cut
not,
me some
not good. Not
so
good.
You're just getting more like blah with Brady Singer.
Yeah, I know. It's tough. I'm still a believer. The improvements in the second half, the walk rate dropped nicely to 5%, while the strikeout rate rose to 23%. Like I like seeing that kind of improvement. That's where most of his success was, 3.94 XFIP in the second half compared to 4.51 in the first half. So I'm still like, you know, the whip went from 1.56 to 1.29. There's a lot of nice improvements in the second half of the season. I'm trying to build on the way he finished, not the way he started kind of scenario. And as Mr. Gialdi says, Singer is so cheap. If he can finally work out the third pitch, he will be useful. I agree, Mr. Gialdi. Thanks for chipping in there. Check is in the mail. I appreciate it.
For the YouTube crowd, that the font size of that if was pretty much the whole screen. So I'm just giving you guys crap. That is a legitimately good point on the second half. I can't sit here and say, you know, and bag Taj Bradley for his poor second half and not mention the gains from Singer in the second half. So maybe made some adjustments based on how bad he was in the first half. So, yeah, take your 4.37 ERA and have fun with it.
Oh, I will. I will spring into the draft room with it.
Luckily, that didn't make me laugh.
Yeah, he has a 4.54 ADP.
That's a really good point by Gialdi. And at that point in the draft, like. Starting pitching is starting to get really barren. So
Casey Mize, Clayton Kershaw, Kyle Hendricks, Wade Miley, Patrick Sandoval. Like, look what we're talking about here. Like, so it does get murky, to say the least. I'm going to mention Mr. Grayson Rodriguez to give him some more love, because I think we're both tremendous Grayson fans this season. So 4.35 ERA last year. Obviously, we've talked about it with almost every stat we see with him. First half heavy, second half not part of that. Steamer's got him at a 3.6 ERA. So how are we feeling there?
Yeah, love it. If anything, I'd go lower.
Yeah, I was thinking lower for sure.
Yeah, we've talked about Grayson a good amount already. It's more, yeah, what we saw in the second half, but not just that. It was the, you know, he's up for the first time in the big leagues, gets sent down, reworks some things. Velocity's a lot better when he comes back up, made some changes there. And the second half skills, like, again, with the Gialdi size if, but if those second half skills last for an entire season, you're getting like a top 10, top five pitcher in Grayson Rodriguez. And the park's great too, so.
Yeah, back to Brady Singer real quick. Kevin Hastings says Singer should be much more comfortable as the four than when he expected to be the one. Agreed as well. Good call.
That's a backhanded compliment. I like it.
Yep. It works. Hey, anybody else on the good side of things? We got a couple of Oakland Athletics, Waldichuk, Medina. I've got a few shares of already in leagues just for his price point. And like Waldichuk and Medina were two guys we streamed once in a while in our game last year because they'd have moments of goodness. So they're intriguing that they're on this list. Jordan Lyles, like you made fun of Singer. He went from a 6.28 to a 5.25, and we're still like cool with that. And then Spencer Strider, of all people, like that's how good Spencer Strider was. That 3.86 to 3.18 is still that big of a game type thing. So who else on the positive side of things before we go to the not so positive side?
No, I was happy to see Strider at a 3.18. I think that's right. I think what we saw from Strider last year was a elevated BABIP, a low left on base rate. Those tend to stabilize year to year and not hold. So that's why I call them more luck factors than actual skills. And so Spencer Strider is a low threes ERA skill set. I don't think I have anybody else. Waldichuk is so like, look at his ADP, 700. Like,
yeah, which is ridiculous. Is he hurt? Are you looking at the right? I haven't forced, or well, no. I have 720. What in the world?
No, it's not good. It's not good. Waldichuk underwent a tenex procedure in October.
There you go.
Diagnosed with UCL and flexor damage.
Yeah, so, he gone. That's why.
That would explain that. If Waldichuk had a functioning elbow, which he still might, it's not Tommy John, I don't think. It could be Tommy John, but again,
UCL is usually Tommy John related of some sort.
Yeah. We did use him in our streaming game a few times last year just because there are some Ks and the home park is so good. But
no. Yeah, Medina is the guy I'm really interested in. We saw like amazing starts from him and then also starts where he couldn't find the strike zone. A lot of Taj Bradley, Medina, I could see. There's a lot of like similarities between the two. Bradley's the better pitcher in my mind. But let's not forget, Medina was a prospect as well, not as highly like talked about, but he was called up before the other Mason Millers and A's pitchers on that team to make starts. So Medina is also a young guy that might be trying to figure it out as well. So I'm intrigued with him a bit too.
I like that call. Should have a safe gig in Oakland through 128 innings last year. So he'll pitch and had a 3.67 expected ERA in the second half. So in spots, Luis Medina could work.
Serviceable, as they say. Yep. Let's go to the not so good side of things. I'm just gonna give one brief comment on Javier Assad, and if you feel like digging in, you can. But he had a 3.05 ERA but Steamer's got him at 4.72. I only mentioned this because I joked around on our show a lot because I rostered him on a couple draft champions teams, and I think he even picked him up in Fab. He pitches to a lot of contact, so the 3.05 was very fortunate, is all I'm gonna say. And 4.72 makes a lot more sense.
And that's probably why Assad is projected to fade the most out of any starting pitcher. Is it's pitching to contact, like in the aggregate, does not work. There are a few guys, but like this isn't Greg Maddux anymore. No. This is pitching to contact doesn't really work.
Now let's get to some fun names, like because you said Steamer is pretty good on some of these guys last year. Michael Wacha, 3.22 ERA. 4.67 according to Steamer for this season, and he was one of those guys that you just kept waiting for the other shoe to drop, but he literally would throw five or six innings, very serviceable innings. Picked up 14 wins last year. He was 14-4 last year. He was 11-2 the year before. And he just continued to slug along and make it work. And it's just like he's just this old man that keeps making it work. And I just don't get it. So what's your thoughts on Michael Wacha?
He's just like there, gets it done. I'm not. I mean, so yes, the last two seasons, Michael Wacha has outpitched his ERA to expected ERA by almost a full run in 2022, and then almost a full run and a half in 2023. So you think, oh, maybe he's just one of those guys that, you know, is better than his skills. Maybe he's the Jared Weaver of 2024. Michael Wacha, the year before that, 2021, had a 5.05 ERA and a 4.09 expected ERA. So you're kind of like, you pitch better than your skills until you don't. And maybe the coin flipped on the right side for Wacha 2 years in a row. That doesn't mean he's just one of those guys that's better than his skills. And you kind of touched on the key metrics. I agree with all that. Plus, you've got like injuries. He hasn't thrown more than 140 innings. So it's not like someone, while he's healthy, is going to be that great for you.
Yeah, and like if you just look on the draft boards, he's got a 274 ADP. It's like Nestor Cortez, Kyle Harrison, Seth Lugo right before him, Cutter Crawford. Means I'm not really in on. I'm worried there, but like Griffin Canning's down there. There's definitely some options I feel a little more confident, especially in the strikeout department. Wacha doesn't strike guys out. And I know if you guys listen to us long enough, especially on my side of things, I want strikeout guys unless it's literally late in the draft and hold where I'm just needing things. Now, Wacha can be streamed from time to time throughout the season. I'm just not drafting him to be a dude. Let's put it that way. And the ADP, he's getting rewarded in ADP for what he did last year. Just don't count on that is what I'm trying to say. And that's the problem.
Yep.
Blake Snell, this is a fun one because there's a lot of hate for Blake Snell on the Twitter there. 2.25 ERA, NL Cy Young. But he had a 3.65 projected ERA from Steamer this year. And I know a lot of people just point straight to, you know, he walks guys, he pitches around guys, like whatever you want. We've talked about it before because even he had a 3.62 XFIP. That's not horrible. To me, it's more the fact that, yeah, 2.25 is awesome. 3.65 is pretty dang cool too. Like, I'm cool with 3.65. So he's on this list, and a lot of people are like, well, that's why I can't draft him or I can't do that. But let's be real. If he's healthy and a 3.65 comes, that's a heck of a lot of strikeouts coming too. So I'm a fan.
And this is one where I definitely think context is needed because if Blake Snell throws a 3.65 ERA next year, yes, that would be the third worst drop in ERA by the projections. Blake Snell, with what he does in strikeouts, would be the, I'm plugging this in, would still be a top 20 pitcher. And so like, I think by ADP, Blake Snell is, the 17th starting pitcher off the board. So he basically, if we believe Steamer and Blake Snell ERA rises 1.4 runs, which is huge. And yes, no one's expecting him to return a 2.25 ERA. He is still a top 20 guy because of all the strikeouts. And so this is one where like, yeah, even though the ERA goes up, I mean, that's just one category and we'll see where he lands, see what the wins look like. But the strikeouts are so good with Blake Snell that I think if you can pair him with a couple like Logan Webbs or Gilbert or Kirby, those types of guys, you can do pretty well for yourself in like, I don't know, third, fourth round. I think that's where Snell's going.
If like you look at Snell's just career, we talk more than just like a 1 year sample, like we said. So in 2022, 3.38. Then you had a 4.20, 3.24, 4.29, 1.89, 4.04, 3.54. He's usually been a pretty respectable ERA guy to begin with. Like he's not, knock on wood, crushing you. It's a matter of health and staying in the rotation. That's the biggest thing with him. So if you can keep that going, it's like Yahtzee. So I think it's like a fun one for sure.
The only nitpick I'd have with the Steamer projection for Snell is, the 170 whatever innings that he's scheduled to project
a couple times.
Yeah, hasn't done that much. But
yeah, so we'll see how that goes. I am going to jump to Josiah Gray just because this is a guy, 3.91 ERA last season, very, very good. Steamer's got him for 5.21 this season. And he's one of those guys, when you're in the draft room, you're looking, okay, he's increased his innings each of the last few years, which has been great. Strikeout stuff's kind of dwindled. Walks are an issue. Power is an issue, but dwindled this last year. So there's like a lot of questions as you go through his profile. But then there's starts where you're like, man, that was actually pretty good. So when you see this from Josiah Gray, what does it make you like think?
No, I'm on board with it. The things broke pretty good for Josiah Gray last year, despite another drop in strikeout rate, down to 20%, which is really bad, especially given an 11% walk rate. Like, that's a single digit strikeout minus walk. That's not good. And what Steamer is kind of projecting here is Josiah Gray is kind of that track record and home run regression. Josiah Gray has been extremely homer prone throughout his career. He's been a pretty heavy fly ball pitcher, 54% in 2021, 49% fly ball rate in 2022, and that dropped to like 41%, but then went back up to 47% in the second half. So I think Steamer sees that and thinks the home runs are coming back up. And so you combine that with a left on base rate that was pretty high. Like it's tough for me to go after Josiah Gray. Like, I maybe he beats a 521, but I don't see anything better than like the high fours.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that one. It's tough because his ADP is very generous at 375, which makes you kind of like, okay, the innings are there. Can he figure it out? I don't know. He's still super young, but yeah, there's still, he's not improving. He's like getting worse in the categories you're looking for, which is not great to say the least.
I mean, he did lead baseball in walks and home runs either in 2022 or 21, and he didn't do that last year, so that is technically.
That's an improvement. That's a definite improvement for sure. Let's talk Tanner Bibee. This is one, a name, 2.98 ERA last year, but Steamers got him at 4.20. Outstanding, obviously, last year through 142 innings in the big clubs, with the big club over almost 160 total. Ratios were really good, but you look at the other ratio like determiners, not good. What are your thoughts when you look at Tanner Bibee? Because it's a guy I like a lot. I've actually been, I'll admit it. Like, first off, thanks to everybody that signed up for the Substack. I will be getting back to you guys. It's been holiday's been difficult, but I've been trying to work on a Tanner Bibee article. Analyzing pitchers is my worst aspect. I can write hitters all day long. Pitchers is very complicated for me. There's so many things going on. I have like four different things open for Bibee right now, and it's a head scratcher for me. So I'm really curious to see what your thoughts are on him.
Got a lot. Like, I'm encouraged by Tanner Bibee. I'm taking the under on a 420. I think Bibee's more of like a mid threes ERA guy. I don't think he can break three again. But we saw first half, second half, as this guy is adjusting. We saw the ball rate go down from 38%, which is league average on that is 36%. So Tanner Bibee in the first half, like the command wasn't really there. That went down to 35%. So got much better through a lot more strikes while also getting a lot more whiffs in the second half and doing it like while being pushed. I mean, this is a rookie, his first time making adjustments in the big leagues. And I just think the way he handled himself and the way Cleveland handled Tanner Bibee, I think you're looking at a mid-threes ERA guy, which where Bibee is going, I think is fine. Because I do think there's some strikeout upside compared to what we saw from Bibee last year, which was just a 24% K rate, I believe, which is just kind of meh. But in the forecaster, we put an upside of 200 Ks on Tanner Bibee, basically for those reasons that I just laid out. So this is one where I'm kind of bucking from Steamer.
Yeah. And that's kind of one of the things I wanted to mention. First off, I have the forecaster up to Bibee's page because I've been looking at that. And I like the projections they have there. I like the upside of 200 Ks. Like, I was digging in on the PLV page for him. And this is what really confused me, but it's also kind of a usage factor, how often he uses certain pitches. But he has like an elite slider. He only uses it 27% of the time, which is frustrating because his fastball is a little below average. It's almost a 50% pitch. And his changeup is above average. It's pretty darn good, too. And he only uses that 17% of the time. So to me, just from the outside looking in, this is a guy that if he just kind of tweaked his pitch mix up a little more and kind of went a little less fastball heavy and more slider changeup, like the strikeouts could come in even bigger bunches to go along with what you said, the 200K projection. And that's where I'm like, I am optimistic on what I see. It's just he's so fastball heavy, and that's kind of where he once they got into trouble, obviously with the 2.95 or 2.98 ERA, but it leads to trouble compared to the other pitches. So, because like if you guys go deeper into the StatCast page, and his fastball was just very hittable, like very hittable.
And didn't throw it for strikes at all. He actually threw his slider and changeup for strikes more often than his fastball, which you don't really see.
That's why I was like, that's why I said I've been taking. I look at his StatCast and pitch my. I just get baffled looking at this guy because it's just such a weird profile. So I am intrigued with Tanner Bibee. I'm with you on that. So we'll see if he can keep it going this year. Let's go to Michael King. The guy that was, you know, potentially going into last season, the backup to Clay Holmes at one point in time, goes into the rotation instead and was just awesome. He still picked up six saves last year to top it off, but ended up throwing 104 innings, which was big, 2.75 ERA, 3.37 xFIP. But Steamer has him at a wonderful 3.88 ERA, which is still pretty good. So what's your thoughts on Michael King?
I've got him for like a 350. So Michael King was one of the ones when I posted this on Twitter. Got a few. Bibee and King were the two where people were like, wow, that's interesting. Michael King's a tough one to project because you need to be very careful. Jeff Zimmerman's big on this. You need to be very careful looking at starting pitcher versus reliever splits. Yes. And so it's a tough projection. I honestly don't know if Steamer does that. So I can't really comment on that. What I do know is like Michael King throws four pitches over 15% of the time. Skills were really good last year. So I'm taking the under on that ERA. My concern is just the volume. I mean, he threw 104 innings last year. Like, I think if you buy Steamer and that's a 3.88 ERA with volume concerns, Michael King is way overpriced at his ADP. So. But I do think he's like a mid-threes ERA guy with some good strikeout potential. And San Diego, he will have the job. It's just how long will the arm hold up?
Yeah, that's my biggest concern. I have no doubt my confidence of his skills. I just don't know how long his skills will be in play. And that is my concern when you're looking at drafting a guy like King with a ADP of 145. Like that's, you need something a little more there.
Don't sound so surprised. I took Mr. King. I've taken him a few times around. I think like 10th round, something like that.
That's fine. All right. The last guy I want to bring up here is Gerrit Cole, our unanimous number two, almost your number three. It was close. There was discussions to be made here, but Gerrit Cole, he had a 2.63 ERA as he went. We have the two Cy Young Award winners on this chart, by the way.
Yeah.
Yep. And he drops down to a 3.73, which again, still not a bad ERA, but not what you want from your elite dude. Let's put it that way. And the 3.73 is a lot closer to his xFIP and his Sierra from last year, which is something to maybe think about. But you mentioned a lot of things on Cole earlier when we did our top 20 countdown. So what are your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, it's like we both had him number two, but like we both seem pretty hesitant to put him there. And you don't, I mean, this is one where like, yes, you, I mean, the track record, the volume, that's all just absolutely bulletproof. But there are signs. There absolutely are signs with Gerrit Cole. The strikeout rate has dropped from 34 down to 32 down to 27. The swinging strike rate was a career low last year. Rebounded somewhat in the second half, which is good, like, which is a positive sign. But I'm a little surprised, Steamer, this is the projection for Cole, but like, I wouldn't be shocked if, you know, crazy stuff happens with starting pitchers. And like you said, some of the names that were on here last year, was like, what? And could happen with Gerrit Cole.
Yeah. He could take a step back, but at the same time, if it's 3.73, if that offense comes better, still rack up 15 plus wins, still get you 200 plus Ks. So it's just one of those things if because of the innings you'll throw out there. So it's a tough one to say the least.
That's the thing. Like if I put, let's see, I'm going to put, because I've got my draft sheet up. What's his ERA?
They're projected for 3.73.
3.73. At 200 innings with the number of Ks, and I've got like 15 wins for Gerrit Cole. That lineup, like you were just saying, he's still the number two starting pitcher.
That's what I'm saying. Like,
so like similar to Snell, he can still fall back quite a bit, but the wins, the strikeouts, the volume is so good that it's still there. So
that's one thing, diving in so much already and doing the drafts I've been doing. That's my biggest takeaway from the early pitchers that I'm more focused on is the strikeouts and the innings. Like, the ERAs are what they are, because, and we've said it before, like, yes, we're using steamer projections, but when we use projections, we trust the hitter projections way more than pitchers. More often than not, like, obviously, we'll get it out there. This is cool because this exercise has worked in the past, and it's just a fun discussion point. But the fact that I just wanted to bring up, if Cole falls to, like, a 3.73, if he still gets to the innings, he's not going to crush you. And that's one thing. Like, my point was, is don't drop him off your board just because you see this 3.73.
Yeah, and I totally get, if you want to go like Zach Wheeler, or, you know, my man Pablo Lopez, maybe not that much, but if you want to go that route over Cole, I get it. But like, don't sleep on how rock solid and stable he is.
100%. All right, let's switch over to the K to walks, as we've hit pretty much all the main culprits on this board. Really fun board here, but the K to walks, like you said, we've it's first half, it's April to June versus second half, July to September. It's a chart we pretty much used at FPAS, but like Ryan said, it was more for trivia, more so than kind of breaking things down, to say the least. If you guys followed my tweet today, the GIF said everything you need to know about this chart when Frederick Peralta was in the GIF, because Freddie is team Bubba and the Bloom, or we are team Freddie, you decide, either way. But 16.7 K to walk in the first half, 30.5 in the second half. I know I should have let you explain the board if you'd like, but I was too excited to talk about Freddie. So the floor is yours.
Easy, Bubba. No, Peralta had the best. I mean, 30% strikeout minus walk is like
ridiculous.
That's just absurd. It's just absurd.
It's
so
elite closer stuff.
Yep, it is. So I don't have too much to add. Again, we've kind of already talked about him. The board in general, so like, and so what we've talked about in the last exercise, we've mentioned a lot, first half, second half, and finishing strong, finishing not strong. Just feel like this board just lays out the guys who finish strong, and we can then pick through this list and, you know, a steamer projection, or really any projection, is likely not going to weight a second half gain. They're going to weight that track record more. And like you were saying for pitchers, Bubba, we're much more able to we believe that pitchers can kind of reinvent themselves if we see improvement and we see changes in other things, approach, that sort of thing. That just adds kind of further, I don't know, fuel to the fires, right? The right word, but it makes you kind of go out on the limb even more and draft these guys ahead of ADP if you want to.
Let's just go to the next guy on the list then. Nick Pivetta, who was outstanding in the second half. 15.3% K to walk in the first half, 29% in the second half. Now, a lot of that came when they started utilizing him out of the bullpen, used him with an opener. Like, he was just filthy in the strikeout departments in the second half of the season. Not sure how he'll get utilized this season, but definite positive gains from first half to second half. The ratios got better. Obviously, the strikeouts got better. What are you thinking when you see Nick Pivetta? Because it was a big boy party for him.
So what I also did for this show is I ran some numbers and pulled who switched up their pitch mix the most in this time frame. So from first to second half, Nick Pivetta by far, he basically switched up half of his pitch mix in the second half. So to what I was just saying, if you basically double your strikeout minus walk, which is our favorite metric, should be a sponsor of the podcast at this point. Nick Pivetta, not only did he improve, but the pitch mix change, like, even I think, makes me think that the second half gains will stick. Through a cutter 14% of the time, through a little bit more of a sweeper in the second half, both of those pitches, 20% swinging strike, at least on both of those. Four-seam fastball whiff rate at 14%, which is just elite. Like, Pivetta, we've all been burned by Pivetta, but like, if you remove the name, you look at the mix change, the fastball, and some of the secondaries that he was flashing in the second half, I don't see how you don't buy in. Like you said, maybe the role, maybe there's some uncertainty in the role, but they'll find a way.
Yeah, it's very, very, very intriguing with Nick Pivetta. Let's talk about our conundrum, our yearly conundrum, Aaron Nola. Like, while you were talking, I started pulling up his splits and wild stuff here. So he goes 16.7 K to walk in April to June, 22.7 in July to September. That's a great improvement. His ERA got worse in the second half. His BABIP went through the roof. Home runs were down 21 to 11 Like, this is the Nick or the Aaron Nola just conundrum in a nutshell.
Freudian slip. I like it.
Yeah, it was. But, like, what do you, when you look at this, what are you thinking with Aaron Nola? Because on paper, some of it was massively improved. Like I said, the home runs improved a ton. K to walk was great, but he got BABIP to death.
He did. He's just trying to suck us back in, man. He's trying to suck us back in. And again, like I was saying with Pivetta, like, remove the name. Look at what he did the second half. Like, he, it's still, it's there. It is interesting to note Nola.
Did it too.
really did not change his pitch mix at all from first to second half, at least usage wise. I'm not sure, like, movement and all that stuff, arm slot, that sort of thing. So that I don't know, but at least the usage of his pitches, he did not change. I don't know. I just an enigma. I could see myself taking Nola in like the fourth round again. I mean, it's the volume, but it's going to be tough. It'll be tough given what he did to us last year.
Well, let's talk about a guy. I've already mentioned Griffin Canning's name in ADP once, but this was a big improvement and he kind of took the waiver wire by storm. I think his last couple starts weren't ideal, but overall his second half was really, really good. 16.9K to walk to 22.6. And the ratios followed, less home runs, the whole shebang. So when you look at Canning, what are you seeing with him? Because I know he's a very popular name in these early draft streets.
Yeah, I think Canning popped the most on Twitter when I posted this. Because he's cheap, the ADP is 291, and the skills are like borderline elite from what we saw Griffin Canning last year. Now, volume and injury history is why Griffin Canning is cheap. But he threw 127 innings last year. It's not like this is a major volume issue. And if we're talking pitchers, they're all injury risks at some point. So I'm absolutely willing to take on what might be like a minor volume concern at an ADP of like 291 in Draft Champions Leagues for Griffin Canning. I think he's a great buy. Like, he was already decent before, like in the first half, and then he improved this much in the second half. So.
Yeah, and that's why it's interesting. Like we talked about Michael Wacha, Canning's going 20 picks after him. It's just
wow, it's tough, really?
Yeah, it's a tough one to stomach with Michael Wacha.
Yeah, that's I think a no-brainer.
On paper, it definitely looks like a no-brainer. I'm with you on that one. Justin Steele, got to bring him up. 16.5K to walk to 22.2. You know, he's in the Cy Young running, kind of scuffled his last couple starts. Obviously, but still finished pretty darn strong. First half was much better than the second half when it came to ratios and everything else. But even, you know, the home runs, you have more home runs in the second half. So more hittable in the second half, yet better strikeout stuff. Actually, strikeout rate was the same. It was the strikeout rate jumped like 5%.
It jumped
like 5%. I was looking at a different thing, 5%. Yep. So he was striking out more guys, yet giving up more production. So what are you thinking when you see Justin Steele?
Justin Steele was one of the top guys on this list last year, which was one of the reasons why we were both in on him. And actually number one on this list last year, I should have mentioned that at the top, was Cy Snell. So nice. There were a few other hits. There's always misses on these. I mean, nothing's 100%, but there is that little tidbit. Justin Steele, interestingly enough, did not change his pitch mix at all first to second half, just because he is such a two-pitch guy. But, like, yeah, the 5% jump in strikeout rate in the second half. Is he going to post a 306 CRA again? No. But, like, mid-threes, through 170 innings last year, and the price on Steele is 100.
Like, I think that's right behind Tanner Bibee.
Yeah, and like around Walker Buehler, Joe Musgrove. I mean, at this point in the offseason, given the injury concerns with those guys, I think Justin Steele is a pretty good buy. Like, I think a lot of folks are expecting regression on Steele because, coming off a career year, and no, he's not going to repeat it, but like, I think he'd come pretty close.
Yep. I'm on board again. I just took him as my SP2 in the NFPC 50 I'm in right now. So I'm definitely in on that one. William Jones in the chat here says, how do you feel about the Stuff Plus metric and the fact that Steele had really low numbers in that metric?
So that's a really good question, William. And I personally don't use Stuff Plus that much in my analysis. I think just for me, it gets really granular and it's a great tool. It's a great way to kind of quantify the effectiveness of pitches. I think when you have, I think Stuff Plus is really good for small samples, for relievers, for guys that are, that just came up. And you know, maybe in Fab, they threw two starts and you need to make a decision on whether, you know, how much to bid on this guy in Fab. That's when I look at Stuff Plus, because it's very quick. Yes.
To adjust.
Exactly. Whereas like Justin Steele, I mentioned the 173 innings. At a certain point, I'm just going to trust strikeout minus walk, whiff rate, and ball rate over a larger sample. So that's how I use it personally. I'm not saying that's the right way, but that's my kind of take on it.
Eno's even said he loves using it for finding relievers and stuff like that. Like, he's flat out said it's a great metric for that. So, yeah, I'm with you there. I rarely ever use it. Like I've said, there's a million metrics now. I'm just a caveman, so I try to keep it simple. Like, there's just – I can't do everything. So I usually don't even use it that often, unless it is to find something on the waiver wire, like Ryan talked about, which maybe we'll use once in a while. Who knows? We'll see. But there's a lot of names here, so I'm trying to decipher where we want to go. But you mentioned changing pitch mix up. So I want to bring Kyle Bradish on here because I know he did. So I want to let you talk about him for a second. Kyle Bradish had a 15.9% K to walk in the first half, 20.6 in the second half. Obviously had an amazing season. Can he duplicate to that level of success? That's the question. But pitch mix was a major factor. So what do you have on him?
Yeah, and the slider just became very slider heavy through the curveball.
Z Tanner Bibee, take a message.
I know. He could definitely take a book from the Tanner Bibee. And I'm sure, not to go back to Bibee, but Cleveland knows what they're doing, man. They've had a lot of guys pitch backwards like that too.
Yep.
In the past, Shane Bieber never had an elite.
He never had an elite fastball. Hittable, as we see now. It's not special.
Yeah. So, the big pitch mix change with Bradish was a lot more sliders, and basically ditched his changeup in the second half. Those were the two big changes. And for good reason. Slider 18% swinging strike, which is really good. The fastball is not that great. The sinker is not that great. The curveball is okay. Curveball is really good. But you see a jump in whiffs. You see a jump in strikeouts. You see an improvement in walk rate from first to second half. And you see a 10-point improvement in ground ball rate from Kyle Bradish in that park with that team. I do think he's fully priced, but I think Kyle Bradish is a fine buy. And I think we got a listener question comment from Calling My Shot, who, not to put you on the spot, Bubba, but also went into a really good.
Do you want to do that one right now?
Thing on, yeah, it might as well.
I got it then.
He went into Bradish in depth. I think it was a question, and
yeah,
he kind of covered everything.
He basically said, "Is Kyle Bradish the real ace in Baltimore among starting pitchers with 100 plus innings pitched in 2023?" Bradish had a 104 whip, which was T4 in MLB, tied with George Kirby. He has 126 stuff plus, is third in MLB. Strider had a 125. He had a 376 Sierra, which is top 25. It's right around Luis Castillo's 375. He had a plus 25% K rate, low career walk rate, and on a good O's team in a friendly park. His second half was actually better than his first half in 96 and two-thirds innings. From July to the end of the season, Bradish had 101 Ks, a 2.15 ERA, a 27% K, 6.4% walk, which we just talked about, and a 3.25 xFIP. Calling My Shot has Bradish inside his top 20 SP. Can you talk me off the sledge, or am I going to have some company?
Great stuff.
I get it. I just don't know if I have him. From what we talked about on our top 20 episode, there's a lot of guys that are kind of in those ranges of moving pieces back and forth. I get where he's at, but I don't have him top 20.
It's funny. Bradish and Justin Steele are pretty much right next to each other in ADP. I think I'd go Steele.
To go back
to William's question about Stuff Plus, that Colin just mentioned in the tweet, by the way, I'm glad we're going to be transparent about these auction leagues, because I don't want to be in Colin's league at this point.
Yeah.
Very smart dude. Outliers and Stuff Plus like that are, I think, meaningful. So I think Colin in the tweet said Bradish is the second or third best Stuff Plus. You should take that into account, the outliers like that.
And let's just say I'm looking at my starting pitching rankings right now while we're talking about it. I have Kyle Bradish 27. Like, he's literally, it goes Grayson, Scooble, Yuri, Eflin, Ryan, Bybee, Bradish. If you want to mix and match there, you're more than welcome. I'm not going to hold anybody's foot to a flame, and that could change. Like, I like Bradish. It's one of those where he jumps so much, I kind of, like, the numbers are legit. I'm not denying that, but do I want to push him that much higher? Type thing.
Yeah, he's 26 for me.
So. Yeah. But I won't, like, if you want to have him top 20, Colin, no problem. Like, I totally get it, but I'm not there yet. But I did just did an Orioles preview, and MLB Dream was pretty legit. Like, that's how I learned about the pitch mix, was listening to him talk about it, and he was pretty optimistic in what Kyle Bradish did. Let's put it that way. I just want to bring up real quick, we don't have to dive into him because we just did, but Gerrit Cole's even on this list, 19.6% K to walk to 23%, goes back to the argument that even a potential decrease in the ERA, the stuff's still there, folks. Just want to throw that out there. Like, he finished very strong, thus the Cy Young. I'll let you take the floor here, though, because you did a little more deep diving in pitch mix. Like, there's a handful of guys I'd have no problem talking about here. So who are some of the ones that interested you? Because these are some higher up names, I should say, at least some names we're interested in.
Got to mention. So just a list of guys who change up their pitch mix the most from first to second. So Pivetta was number one. Zach Eflin was number two. So switched up his pitch mix and saw the strikeout minus walk rise from, where is he at? 21.4% to 25.2. That's a jump. Really, really good. Tampa obviously saw something there, made an adjustment, and Zach Eflin, I think is a great pitcher to buy. I got to give a shout out to our boy Ben Tidd, who told me not to mention Kode Senga, who shows up on this list. Because we keep talking about the walk issues with Senga. Senga switched up his pitch mix the third most out of any starting pitcher on this list from first to second half. And the walk rate was awful in the first half.
Yep.
Got better. A little better. Still not like even league average, but like much more palatable in the second half when you combine that with all the K's and the volume that Kode Senga can get you, I think he's a really good buy here. Try to see which pitch he ditched. But yeah, go on.
Honestly, I'm a big fan of Senga. We've talked about him quite a bit. Like, there's those adjustments in the second half, and the increase in strikeouts was tremendous to see. So I'm looking forward to his first season, after like his second season, but his first kind of after he got maybe accustomed to Major League Baseball and maybe comfortable in the U.S. I'm very, very interested to see how he does.
Agreed.
All right. If you're ready to wrap this up, we got a couple listener questions. You guys came through on January 4th. I'm loving the excitement. So let's hop into a few listener questions here. We already got calling my shots. Kyle Bradish love song, which is beautiful. It's justified. That's all I'm gonna say. Like, he's very, very, very good. So you got that going for you. Jack Kitchen hit us up earlier today in the DMs, and he says, I was wondering if you know where most people get fantasy points gained data. Any idea? Can you add that info into your pod with Bubba the Bloom, which is great, by the way. Ryan and I texted about this. And I'm guessing this is more SGP standard gain points question. What's your thoughts on this? Because I'm not the sheets kind of guy.
Yeah. We'll assume this is standing gains points, but basically what that is. And so when I say, like, when I just said Kyle Bradish is my 26th pitcher off the board, it's basically taking the five stats that make up, you know, rotisserie, and converting that, using a formula, converting that to a single number where you can rank these guys. And so it's a very complex formula. I don't even know the intricacies of it. So I'm not really qualified to kind of speak on it. I do know a lot of really good resources, but basically what, and I'll get to that in just a second, but it's basically using your league's history, if you have it. And this is why the NFBC is so great too, because they post all the results publicly. And you can download all that and get standing gains points from, you can basically get the formula from their standings over like a ton of leagues. So it's very useful. But basically that's what it does, is it combines, it converts what you have projection wise into a standing gain points number. And what standing gains points is basically like, this is how many steals you need to move up 1 point in the standings based on your league history. This is how many home runs would move you up 1 point in your league's standings given its history. So you can kind of take that. It gets much more complicated, like the ratios, there's more complicated formulas. You then have to like convert these to dollar values and adjust for positional, and like there's all this stuff, but in essence that's what it is. A couple of resources I would recommend. Larry Schechter has a book called Winning Fantasy Baseball, came out about like 8 years ago. He goes into the details on how to actually do it. And then Jeff Zimmerman and Tanner Bell, yeah. The process just came out where they have posted the 2023 formulas. And Tanner, even on his website, I hope I get it right, Smart Fantasy BB.
I think so. Yeah, that sounds right. Cause it's Smart Fantasy Baseball, but I guess like BB. Yeah, I think you're right.
SmartFantasyBaseball.com. Okay. Tanner has an actual Excel sheet that has this all built out. And I think Toby, like, he said
Toby loves it. Toby's religious with it. And
if you don't want the details, you just want to use the sheet and actually use it, go to Tanner Bell's website, smartfantasybaseball.com, if you want to learn the kind of theory behind it. Read Larry Schechter's book.
There you go. Martin Sikulski, he asks, who do you prefer in 2024, Yuri Perez, Grayson Rodriguez, or Bobby Miller? It's pretty
Let's
easy
see. I've got Grayson Rodriguez 19th, Bobby Miller 23rd, and Yuri Perez 32nd, which passes the smell test for me. I think when I have to click the button in the draft room, I'd go Rodriguez over Miller, and then Perez last, which sounds bad, but yeah, go Grayson.
I go Grayson for sure. Then I have Yuri, then Bobby, but I will be 100% honest. The more I do digging and the more I talk to smart people, Bobby Miller is looking more attractive to me. I'm still not in like these other guys, but he's looking much more attractive right now. I'll be honest, but I have him third for me.
As the Giants bias fades away, draft season.
It's just these young pitchers. It really takes a lot for me to get going. They're all three young guys, so it's just tough for me.
Yep.
Dave Petraziello, this is for you, Bloom, because he hit me up with this. And I'm like, this is out of my pay grade. You might have an answer. He says, I need that Wyatt Langford projection on the HQ side addressed. I know how good he was in the small sample at AA and AAA last year, but wow. Also, might he start in the majors? I think maybe. So, yeah, because he said that was one that stood out to him since he's never even been there before.
What do
Wyatt Langford?
Yeah, I'm trying to pull up his projection here. I think this came up in the Slack. Yeah. We need to adjust probably his playing. I think it's playing time more than anything. Batting average really high, 344.
That's a bit. Well, steep.
That's actually a really good point. Let me make some. I know some people.
Yeah, Brian knows a few people. He might be able to, get it through.
Yeah, it's interesting. I take the over on the playing time and the under on the
average.
Pretty much all the rate stats.
Yeah, so thanks you for that, Dave. That should be adjusted in the coming days. Steve Stoughton, he asks, favorite pitcher and hitter to target ADP 250 or higher in DCs?
Oh, man.
250 now. Let's see. I'm on the pitcher page right now, so I'll just throw a pitcher out there. And since you said 250, I will be kind of lazy and go right around there. I think Griffin Canyon at 295 is pretty nice. I'll be honest. We talked about him. That's a fun one.
Nick Lodolo is like right there. I think Nick Lodolo is a great buy. I mentioned on our last episode, maybe two episodes ago, Christopher Sanchez at ADP is like my favorite buy of any starting pitcher at the moment. You can go back and listen to that for the reasons why.
On the hitting side, at 255 is Luis Rengifo. So, like, would we really have to go any farther with this? It's kind of sells itself, right?
Yes, it does. Luis Rengifo, you got to.
I like Anthony Rizzo at 281. I'll say that much. That's just a crime, I think, right now.
Yeah, I gotta see. Let's see. Obviously, did not prepare for this one. Taylor Ward's like 220. That's a little high. I will go. I think Brandon Drury Is it goodbye? Yeah. No, he's just barely inside the 250. If you can stomach a UT only, I think Eloy is worth taking a shot at.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in fab leagues, where if he gets hurt, you can drop him. Justin Turner is probably my favorite one. Yep. I think I mentioned him on our ADP episode at first base. I just think the ADP on Turner is way too low. He will sign with somebody and he will play.
So, yep. Here we go. I'm with you there as well. Sheep, massively good underdog player. He asks, are the kid gloves / innings management risks off of Grayson? I think so. That's my two cents. What's your thoughts?
Yep. I mean, he threw 164 innings last year, 86 in the second half. Like, can't ask for much more than that.
Yep, that's pretty much go time, especially when you look at that Orioles rotation. Let's just go to this just real quick because I pull up roster resource here. Since they lost a lot of arms, and they're going to probably trade for Cease or somebody, but right now you have Bradish, who threw 166 last year. Grayson did his thing, like you mentioned. Means only threw 23. Dean Kramer threw 172. Do you trust that again? And then the fifth spot they're waiting for. So there's a good chance Grayson's needed to throw some innings. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, on a team in contention. Yep. Live question from Alan the Leonardis. Favorite booze-based nasal
decongestant? What are you drinking is what he wants to know, Ryan.
What am I drinking? Water. I'm not drinking it right now, but do some Tullamore Dew, some good Irish whiskey.
There you go.
That'll that loosens up the pathways for me.
A little hot toddy, a little hot toddy in there, a little extra cinnamon with it. That'll get you going.
That's a good question. I like that.
Yeah. And then the last one we have here, unless anybody else sneaks in under the wire, Corbin Young, our buddy. He says Taj, Lance Lynn, and Brady Singer plus Jordan freaking Lyles. One or the one on either list, you don't believe the projection difference. So go back to that first bloom board we had, the ERA versus the steamer ERA. Who is one you believe on the positive side of things?
On the positive
or
side,
or on either list, you pick one you believe and one you don't believe.
I'll go Grayson and Strider on the positive side, and then I'll go, that I don't believe in.
That's the ones you believe in. Now you have to give one you don't believe in.
Dude, I'm limping to the finish.
You got it. I'm here for you.
I don't believe in Bradley. I don't even know what the question is at this point. I don't believe in Bradley. I believe in Strider and Grayson. I don't believe in...
I believe in the Grayson improvements. I'm with you there. What I don't believe in is I don't believe in... let's see here. Let's have some fun here. I don't believe
in... I don't believe in Tanner Bibee at the 420.
Yeah, that's fair. I think it's more of a 350-360. Sounds about right. I'm with you there. So we'll team up on that one. Bibee and Grayson Rodriguez. We'll take that route as we get towards the finish line here. And actually, that was the last question, so we're good. We're in the books. You got this one, Bloom. You made it. You survived. Final thoughts. I don't want to take your last words out of your mouth as you might be. Did you take your NyQuil midway through the show like you wanted to?
No, I forgot. Here we go.
Oh, he's going to take a shot of NyQuil live on air, folks. It's nice to give it a rated R rating. It's not safe for kids anymore. We're taking drugs on the air. But
don't take NyQuil while you have a cough drop in your mouth.
This is great. But yeah, fun stuff. We're going to come at you guys next week, Tuesday, Thursday, positional previews. Obviously, catchers on Tuesday because that's the best position to talk about. Ryan might not even show up. If he's sick, it's fine. I got this one handled. Yep. And then we'll move on around the diamond as usual. So final thoughts, Mr. Bloomfield, now that you're medicated.
Yeah, not baseball related. We've got a little Bubba Bloom, Bills, Dolphins, AFC East on the line on Sunday night.
Yeah, that's the Bills. So Bills to lose. Let's put it that way.
We'll be going back and forth that night, I'm sure. Excited for previews. Excited for previews. We will. We'll talk about kind of how we want to structure it, I guess, over the weekend and knock that out. So draft season's here, man. Let's enjoy it.
Let's rock and roll. That'll be the next few weeks, obviously, to go through all the positions. Yep. And again, rate, review the podcast. If you'd like to just be nice to us, it'd be awesome. But if you want to get into the auction listener leagues, get up in there, send one of us, both of us, the podcast link, whichever one you prefer, a picture of said rating and review, and you'll be on the list as we try to go. If we get to at least four leagues, we will have a special prize for an overall winner. So let's make it happen. Thank you all for doing that. Make sure you check out Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod. I'm at BD Intrick. This was Bubba and the Bloom, episode 96. Catch y'all next time.